Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's breastfeeding story is with Melissa Statler. Melissa had a quick and mostly flowing birth, and feeling elated, she placed her newborn to her breast, only to be met with excruciating pain and instant damage to her nipples. As her confidence drained, she was informed that because her baby was large for gestational age, she would have to meet certain sugar level requirements during the first series of feedings, adding stress to injury. How did Melissa overcome these and more breastfeeding problems to have the satisfying and nurturing breastfeeding relationship she has today? Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Family Album, a family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Baked by Melissa, insanely delicious cupcake bites delivered to your door just in time for Valentine's Day. Go to bakedbymelissa.com/birthful and use the promo code Birthful for 15% off your order of yumminess. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Welcome, welcome. Thank you, as always, for all the love you give the show. And if what you hear is helpful, do make sure you subscribe. It is free, and that way you won't miss a thing. To support this podcast, please support its sponsors, which for this week's case are Family Album and Baked by Melissa. Now, I've got two fun announcements for today. First is that my birth prep online classes are launching next Thursday, February 6th, and they're going to be done via live webinar. These classes are based on the tried and true activities that I do with my doula clients during prenatal meetings to make labor flow. And if labor flows, there are fewer interventions and things go easier and they go quicker. So if you are expecting and you want to know how to support your own physiology and own your birth, go register right away because classes start next week. We will be recording the webinars, but since we're doing the classes as a group, I don't want you to fall too far behind. So go learn more and register at birthfulcourses.com. Now, the second announcement is that this is the last week of our 5 years of Birthful celebration. What a month it has been. I know that there are a whole lot of doulas who listen to this podcast. So this week's bundle that we're giving away is geared specifically for them. Make sure you go to our Instagram post from Monday. The handle is at Birthful Podcast, and you can see the mechanics of how to enter. You can enter until tomorrow, Thursday at noon Eastern time. So yeah, get to it. The bundle includes, in case you're curious of what we're giving away, it's the Comforting Touch for Birth Guide from Yiska Obadia, the Postpartum Doula Business Printable from Betsy Schwartz, and the Diverse Families Course from Bebo Mia. So it's a full course, a printable, and a guide. We're going to announce the winner that evening at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time during a Facebook Live. And my guest for that Facebook Live is none other than the remarkable Dr. Neil Shaw. You may remember him from the episode we did on place of birth as your number one cesarean risk. If you haven't heard that episode, I do encourage you to go listen to it so you can have your mind blown. And Dr. Shaw, which is spelled S-H-A-H, is an assistant professor of obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive biology at Harvard Medical School and director of the Delivery Decisions Initiative at Harvard's Ariadne Labs. And he's also the founder of the nonprofit organizations Cost of Care and March for Moms and producer-writer in the Expecting More project. He is just incredible with everything that he does. So if you're expecting or are a birth nerd of any kind, this talk is going to be a treat. Make sure you tune in tomorrow, January 30th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time to this Facebook Live, which is going to close up our amazing month-long celebration. I want to give an enormous thank you to all my guests for joining me in this celebration, the fabulous donations they've given, and of course to all of you mighty parents and parents-to-be out there who have helped make these 5 years happen. Thank you. Thank you so very much. All right. So my guest today is Melissa Statler, and I love that she wanted to share her breastfeeding story since we don't do that often. And after we recorded, though, Melissa wrote to say that there were a few things that she forgot to mention, which were that one, she did not tear, and that even with the shoulder dystocia, birthing her quote-unquote big baby was not a frightening or traumatic experience. She also wanted me to stress the importance of postpartum preparation in addition to birth preparation because she felt she got caught up in the anticipation of the birth and she overlooked that postpartum adjustment, including breastfeeding. And in retrospect, she thinks it would have really helped to have a course. So that's what Melissa wanted me to tell you that she forgot to say. So let's get to it. Here we go. Welcome, Melissa. It is really great to have you here on the show.
Hello.
I was super excited when you reached out wanting to share your breastfeeding stories because we don't get that many of those. But before we get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. I am a first-time mom of an almost 10-month-old baby girl. Her name's Claire. Before Claire, I was a teacher for a couple of years. I taught sixth grade for 1 year, sixth grade literacy, and then I taught high school for 1 year, IB, junior English, and then also some freshman technology classes. So it was kind of mixed there. But I only taught for the 2 years and then started looking for something different. I was actually working in the medical billing department. I wasn't an actual biller, but for our local hospital. And that's where I worked the whole time I was pregnant. And now I am focusing mainly on my photography business that I do portraits, weddings. And this past year, I actually got to photograph my first birth, which was amazing. And I would love to do more of that. Not that I love all portraits, but this year I would really like to try and find some more birth clients because it was kind of a special thing.
Yeah, congratulations. And I did see the photos that you sent me and some of your photos and on your Instagram feed, and they're gorgeous. You do beautiful work. Yeah, absolutely. So Claire is 10 months now. We are going to focus mainly on the breastfeeding, on your breastfeeding journey. But for context, why don't you give us a little bit about what happened during the birth? What were your wishes for during the pregnancy? What you wanted to, you know, the type of birth that you wanted to have, and then what happened?
Yeah, so going into choosing my provider, I had no idea what I was even looking for. So I kind of by default just went with the same OB that my sister-in-law that had delivered my sister-in-law's baby. And I ended up really loving her, but I, over the course of my pregnancy, decided that it was really important to me to try and do an unmedicated birth. I took a birthing class, my husband and I both did, and I really just wanted to try and do things in the hospital as naturally as I could. I wanted to try and avoid inductions, and I ended up being kind of lucky that the hospital I delivered at was a baby-friendly hospital, so they just kind of by protocol do the direct immediate skin-to-skin after birth, the delayed cord clamping, and I guess my provider told me that she was kind of one of the leading voices in getting the direct skin-to-skin after even C-sections and things like that at the hospital. But yeah, my goal was to go into it and try to do it as naturally as I could in that hospital mm-hmm. setting.
And then how did things start and what happened?
It happened way more quickly than I thought it would. I was very prepared. I'm a very planning-oriented kind of person, so I did a whole bunch of research before. I listened to this podcast every day for my entire third trimester, so I felt like I was prepared for any scenario. The whole total labor was 6 hours and 45 minutes from start to finish. My contractions from the very beginning were 5 minutes apart for a full hour. I remember waking up my husband and being like, just so you know, I think I'm in labor, but I think we have time. And he made me get in the car and packed up everything anyway. And by the time we got in the car, they were 1 to 3 minutes apart the whole way to the hospital. And I was dilated to a 5 by the time we got there. So they admitted me, and I ended up getting in the tub when I got into my labor room, thinking at that point, okay, I'm going to find some sort of rhythm. I'm going to get into this and kind of ready to settle into the contractions, and they just got more and more intense as I sat there in the bath, and I was like, this is escalating so quickly. And out of nowhere, I felt like I was pushing without even trying. I told my husband, I was like, I'm pushing, like, right now, like, this is just happening. So he calls the nurses in, and it was, I don't know exactly how long it was at that point, but it felt like a matter of minutes, and my water broke, and I was pushing. The pushing stage actually took the longest. I mean, not the longest, but it was 2 hours, so a larger percentage of the time. But yeah, so she ended up having, or I guess I ended up having, some shoulder dystocia problems, though. When I started pushing, they realized that she was kind of stuck under my pubic bone. And so she had me kind of change positions a little bit and try to get her out from under there. But that took a long time. So she was kind of turtling in and out. And
once her head was out, or just...
Her head wasn't out. So, yeah, it was just like her head kept crowning and then, like, retreating and then crowning and retreating for most of the pushing time.
And which that is tricky, because that's very common, that the head kind of, like, when with the contraction, the head crowns more, you see more, and then it retreats just to give your tissues a stretch. But it isn't, yeah, until it gets right past that pubic bone and the head, sort of the chin extends so that it can't go back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But depending on how long it was, like, I'm sure she was seeing something different with the, if she was figuring shoulder dystocia from seeing the head.
Yeah.
Or from seeing just the crowning.
Yeah. And so that was, I guess, just from what I've read on it, just kind of one of the first signs was the in and out. And then it was after her head came out that her shoulders actually, like, got locked in.
Right. So that's where the dystocia happens.
Yeah. So she wasn't rotating, kind of got locked in. And at that point, they kind of pressed on my stomach, I guess, from above. And then my doctor was helping her rotate from below, because my contraction had ended at that point. And I couldn't really push anymore, but she was stuck in a way that they needed to get her out right away. So they kind of had my husband step aside, and it was kind of this really quick but crazy moment where I was just kind of like, yeah, get her out of here. And they took her right away and checked her collarbones and everything. She ended up being just fine. There were no injuries or other complications, but yeah. And then she was there, but it felt like a roller coaster for sure.
That is a whirlwind. Yeah. I mean, and considering that you woke up and contractions started just so, were they were 5 minutes apart, but were they feeling really strong, or were they more crampy? Like,
yeah. So they,
they
were definitely different than I'd been having the Braxton Hicks contractions, and I could definitely tell a difference, but it wasn't painful by any means. It was just sort of, yeah, like a cramp. And I was kind of walking around the house, but timing them from the beginning and 5 minutes apart for the whole first hour.
Okay. So, and how, do you know how long they were lasting? Were there short ones?
About long? A minute long, okay. Each time.
Yeah. So you started right up. Well, not too intense, but really close together.
Yeah. And it was, by the time we had packed everything up and gotten in the car, the hospital is like a 40-minute drive from where we lived at the time. And by the time we got in the car, that whole drive, they were a lot more intense. I started kind of doing this, like, shaman chant thing that, in the car, that I, in my leg would, like, shake, and I was just kind of actually starting to feel it. And it was a little concerning at that point, because I was, like, going into it wanting to do the natural labor, and in the car I was so uncomfortable. And I was like, these are feeling so much more intense now. I, like, if it gets worse than this, I don't know. But after I got out of the car, it was a lot better. I kind of took breaks going from the car from the parking garage into the hospital, I would kind of like turtle tuck on the ground when each contraction would hit and then stand back up and be like, okay. And we kind of made our way minute to minute into the hospital that way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, it seems like you had what we called a precipitous birth.
Yeah.
That's so fast. And I will link on the show notes an episode I have on shoulder dystocia with Rachel Reed, Big Babies and Shoulder Dystocia. Oh, how big was your baby?
Yeah, that's actually, I saw that episode a while back and I've been wanting to listen to it. She was 8 pounds, 9.5 ounces. So they did classify her as large for her gestational age.
How many weeks far along were you?
39 and 3 days.
Yeah. So for 8 pounds, 9, and you said 1/4?
9.5. Yeah.
9.5. Is a decent sized baby. For sure.
Yeah, it definitely surprised us too, because I was not measuring larger than usual, and my husband and I are both kind of tall, lanky. Mm-hmm.
Well, clearly you had the space to grow her. Yeah, yeah. When you were pushing, were you still in the tub, like, because you said it took 2 hours?
Yeah, so my provider didn't do water births, so I did have to get out of the tub, but I got out of the tub and I felt most comfortable on my hands and knees, but I put a few contractions that way and her heart rate kept dropping, so they had me turn over for pushing. And it's kind of, I'm not, that part is all kind of foggy because I was like in that transition brain. But yeah, I was on my hands and knees and my water broke. A few contractions happened there. They checked her heart rate and it was steadily dropping. So they had me turn over and then I started pushing from there. She was having me kind of like coaching me through the pushing. But I also felt like if I didn't follow exactly what she was saying, like it was still working. I don't know. Like it felt kind of like a teamwork more than being bossed around, which I was grateful for because I feel like I needed that guidance, but I like being in control, I guess. So I wanted to feel like I knew what I was doing and I could control what was happening. And it was a good balance between those things, I think.
Mm-hmm. Aside from the whole situation with the shoulder dystocia, where I'm sure that was intense and even maybe anxiety producing or scary for you, your husband, when you got people sort of in that mode of, we've got to, like, something is up, right? Mm-hmm. Were you feeling like that, or what, or were you feeling that everything was going to be okay?
I think my husband was probably more afraid than I was. I was pretty loopy at that point. And I, like I said, it was a completely unmedicated birth, but my natural hormones or whatever had just completely, my thinking brain was gone. So I felt pretty confident with it. I just like had this sort of feeling or knowledge, like I trusted my provider and I trusted the people around me. My nurses had been amazing through the whole thing, and it's like I could sense that something was wrong, but I didn't feel afraid, I guess. I remember saying, like, get her out. Like, I was just like, get her out, like, because I felt like I couldn't push anymore at that point, and I kind of relinquished that control for a minute and felt confident that they could do what they needed to do. But yeah, my mm-hmm. husband was the one, he had been right next to me and he was holding my leg for a lot of it. And then they kind of pushed him aside, and I think he was definitely more aware of the situation than I was. And so more worried,
yeah,
for sure.
And it's, you know, it's precious minutes. So people get moving, doing whatever they're doing really fast, really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after she was born, you said they took her away. for a second, did some checks. Did she come back to you pretty quickly?
Yeah. So the only thing that didn't go, I guess, the way that my plan had been was that they cut her cord right away to take her and do all of the checks. But they did bring her right back to me. It was like a matter of seconds. And so they, so the actual progression was, so they brought her up to my chest. She came out right up to my chest. I saw her for a brief moment, and then they had to take her. They cut the cord and took her away in the same room. And then before I could even really register that she was gone, she was back on my chest again.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. So I was a little, I was disappointed, I guess, that the cord hadn't been able to stay intact a little longer. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was a sort of a different situation, I guess.
Right. At that point, they were concerned with other things.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's hard to interject in that moment. Especially you're just coming down from, like you were saying, all those different altered brain states of labor land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get right into your breastfeeding experience. We'll be right back. So this weekend we did a thing. We went axe throwing, you know, as one does for your husband's work party with family. And I was so grateful to have family album right on my phone so that I could immediately add photos and slow motion videos of the event to my album before they disappeared into the depths of my camera roll. Family Album is a fantastic family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. This app is free, offers unlimited storage, and has no ads. Family Album automatically sorts your photos and videos by date, and they also put together short video collages with 1-second clips highlighting your best photos and videos so you can watch how your children have grown and changed over time. One of my favorite things about Family Album is that it does keep things private so that only the people you invite can see your family's photo album. This allows you to share without the whole world watching, and it's super convenient for my parents and siblings who live in Venezuela because we can now easily share pictures exclusively with them. Because they have instant access to what I share with them, they were able to see their granddaughter throw some axes shortly after it happened, as well as write in their comments about what they thought that was all about. I highly recommend you give Family Album a try. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. And remember that Family Album is free to use with unlimited storage and has no ads. Family Album does not collect user data and has strong privacy controls in place. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. That's Family Album, all in one word. And we are back talking with Melissa Stadler about her, well, we've talked about her birth story, which is quite quick and with some drama or excitement or whatever you want to call it at the end, depending on your point of view. And now, once she got back to your chest, how were those moments and how did she do with the latch and how did breastfeeding start?
Yeah, so I, like I said, I had done a lot of preparation before birth and took a breastfeeding class as well, in addition to the birth class we took. My husband and I both went, and I had done other reading on my own online, and so I felt pretty confident going into the breastfeeding side of things. I had been a lot more nervous for the birth, and just felt like the breastfeeding would kind of fall into place, I guess. I'd had people tell me that, you know, it can be painful at first and you just kind of have to adjust and it's a little bit of a learning curve. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's all. I can do things that are difficult. Like, this is no problem. And, but that first latch, she was on my chest. We had that alone time to ourselves in our room in the hospital. And I went to breastfeed her for the first time. And I remember feeling almost cocky about it. Like, I was just like, yeah, I can breastfeed this baby, no problem. And I put her up to my breast and she latched right on. And I instantly, like, all of my confidence just, like, drained away because it was so incredibly painful. I couldn't even keep her on for another second. Like, it was that just excruciating pain. And that's, like, coming from someone who had just birthed with no drugs. Like, it was worse. It was just, like, so sharp and grating. And I was so afraid all of a sudden. And I, like, called my nurse in. And I was like, something's wrong. I need help. And she kind of helped me adjust. And like, it's like everything I had learned in my breastfeeding class just like went out the window. But so she kind of like helped me calm down and give me a recap of like, here's how her lips should look. And here's how you can get her to latch. And we kind of worked on it for a minute. But it was definitely a big change in direction in my mind state. Just going from sheer confidence to, wow, okay, this actually hurts a lot, and what can I do about it? But she worked with me for a while in the hospital there, and it kind of became clear that I was not able to tolerate the pain without some sort of assistance, so she gave me a nipple shield in the hospital that I started using, and that made it tolerable to the point where I could keep breastfeeding her. And so the thing with Claire was because she was born large for her gestational age, they wanted to monitor her blood sugar. And so they were doing these blood sugar checks that she was passing for a while, but then she started to fail her blood sugar tests and her blood sugar was too low. And so my milk hadn't come in yet at that point, and they needed something to bring her blood sugar back up. So the first thing they gave her was, I don't remember.
Was it a glucose gel?
Yes. Yep. That's exactly what it was. I knew it started with a G, but I couldn't remember the word. So yeah, they gave her a glucose gel and that helped, but then she failed another blood sugar test and they suggested that I supplement, and they gave me the option of formula or donor milk. And that was sort of another wind out of my sails feeling. Because in our breastfeeding class, they told us about how you can donate your breast milk and how our hospital accepts breast milk donations. And I was thinking in my head, like, of me being someone who could donate breast milk, not ever being someone who would need donated breast milk. So it was like this, yeah, sort of deflating feeling again of like, oh, well, I can't feed this baby. I have one job right now, and that's to feed this baby. And yeah, her blood sugar just kept dropping. And so I got the donor milk, and I was terrified of all kinds of things. I was like, she's going to like get nipple confusion, and she's going to not want to latch ever, and I'm never going to be able to breastfeed. She's only going to take bottles, and all of these, I guess, anxious thoughts kind of going through my head. But it ended up being fine. She would take the bottle, and then she'd latch again and take the bottle and latch again. We were in the hospital for a couple days. And she would take the donor milk periodically just until she was passing all her blood sugar tests. And yeah, so that was our hospital experience.
And I'm going to backtrack in terms of trying to figure out, like, it's obviously your milk hasn't come in because milk doesn't come in until 3 to 5 days. You just have the colostrum at the beginning. And I am going to link in the show notes to the episode on blood sugar levels for newborns, because I think it's important for people to know also that, like, what are these protocols? What happens? How many sugar levels do they want to, you know, what levels are they looking at? How many do they have to do? How often? There's a lot to that. And it's something that you otherwise never hear about until you're in it, like you were, of the anxiety and the stress of, your baby is having this issue right now and sugar levels, and we need to supplement, or we like make a decision on the fly.
It was definitely something I wished I had had more knowledge about beforehand, because I felt like I couldn't make any sort of decision. I felt like I had to do what they were suggesting, and maybe that was the right choice, and maybe there was a different alternative, but I didn't have any idea of what that could have been. Because you don't know until you're sitting there and they're telling you that there's this issue.
Right. And at that point, you don't have anything to counter with. And also, it's not presented so much of as a choice, but rather like, this is the level, this is what we have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'll link to that episode because it's really informative and it, yeah. So I'll link to that. And I'll also link to an episode on milk banks, milk banking, that explains the process of where that donor milk is coming from and how people can donate.
Very cool.
So while this was happening, I mean, she's getting, so you're she's being put at the breast and then taking some donor milk also with a bottle, and you have the breast shield.
Uh-huh.
Did she get to a point where they, where she was passing her sugar levels and they did, they sort of weaned out of the donor milk, or did, what was the step to going home with her and not having to do anything?
So it was mostly just that she was passing her sugar tests with the donor milk. And at that point, it had been a couple days after birth. And so they kind of just told me, your milk will be coming in soon. We feel like as long as, like, once your milk comes in, that she'll be totally fine. And she's passing the test as long as she has the milk. So they kind of went that way, that just on the assumption that my milk was going to be coming in soon.
Mm-hmm. And while you were at the hospital, did they have you also pump? Was there anything being done, or did you hand express to see how much colostrum you were getting? Was there any assessment with a lactation consultant? Were they coming in to see you? Like, aside from just doing the supplementation, was there something else?
There was a lactation consultant that came. It was more focused on the pain that I was experiencing than the milk that I was producing, or the colostrum, or how much, or whatever, which I kind of appreciated because it gave me a little bit less anxiety about the not producing milk thing. You know, like, they weren't focusing on that. They were just, they just kept telling me, your milk will come in. Like, don't worry about it. Like, that'll, it'll just take time, and you have the colostrum for now, and that, like, that's all she needs. And we have the donor milk here to help her with her blood sugar. So what they focused on was the pain, and they were looking for a tongue tie, because right from the bat, like right off the bat, she, when she latched, she split my nipple. I know there's a term for it, but it was like there's a crease down the center of it, and like instantly that happened. And so they were guessing that it was a tongue tie, and it ended up being what they called tongue thrusting. And so it was more so a muscle movement that she was making than the shape of her mouth. And so they were kind of helping me, like, learn to use the shield, and just kind of telling me that she would grow out of that, that I could position her certain ways that might be more comfortable, but that she would get over the tongue thrusting as she grew, which was helpful, but not as helpful as it could have been, I guess.
Right. Did anybody do sometimes, and I am not a lactation consultant, but I do see them often do where they'll put a pinky finger with the pad side up into the mouth, just so that they can feel the baby suck and also the tongue movement underneath.
Yes. So, well, in the hospital, they had me feel, yeah, how she was sucking, and they would feel it. But a little later on, when I went and saw a different lactation consultant, she actually gave me some exercises that I did with my finger, and that actually helped a lot.
Mm-hmm. How did they explain what the tongue thrusting was to you?
Basically, they were saying that the nipple should go all the way up into her soft palate, and that I shouldn't feel pain if she had a deep enough latch, but that even if her latch looked good on the outside, her lips were flanged out and it looked like she had a deep latch, but her tongue inside wasn't making the correct motion, so it was like hitting the nipple instead of just like brushing against it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what was causing the pain and the nipple splitting, and
for sure. And I'm going to link also to there's an episode with Michelle Manuel on optimal oral function. And the work she does is really helpful. And one of the suggestions is that, like, immediately contact a lactation consultant, but also assessing tongue function and what exercises. I'm so glad you had a lactation consultant that gave you.
Yeah. Specific.
What were those exercises that she told you?
Yeah. So this was a little later on, but she told me to, so the pad side of my finger, I would put it in her mouth with the pad side up and let her kind of establish that sucking pattern first. And then once she had the sucking pattern going, I would turn my finger over so the pad side was against her tongue, and I would press down on her tongue a little bit as I pulled my finger out. So it was supposed to kind of just keep her tongue down and train her tongue to stay down. And I would do that before every feeding session for a while.
And so doing that kind of reminded her of how it is she's supposed to suck at the nipple, and then you would put, and then you would switch her to your nipple?
Yep. So, and it actually did, it even helped with the pain too. So not just her end of the muscle control, but the pain wasn't gone, but when I would do the exercises and then latch her, it was definitely a difference as opposed to when I wouldn't do the exercises.
Oh, of course, because the pain is being created by however she's moving her tongue and how she's mm-hmm. like manhandling your nipple in her mouth.
Yeah.
Let's take another break. When we come back, I know we jumped a bit around from the time you got home. I want to hear a little bit more about that, those first few days home. We'll be right back. Valentine's Day is just around the corner. So if you're looking for a delicious, memorable, and unexpected gift for your loved ones or for yourself or whoever you want to send some love to, I highly encourage you send them bite-sized cupcakes from Baked by Melissa. These cupcakes have got to be the most delicious assortment of cupcakes I've ever tasted. And because they're perfectly bite-sized, I really appreciated that they were bite-sized, it's easy to have one in every flavor, which you'll definitely want to do. I received my Baked by Melissa cupcakes in the mail, and the box was delivered on its side, so I was worried that the frosting would be ruined. But nope, I was really impressed that the cupcakes come inside a masterfully designed tray that keeps them safe and separate from one another. The tray is packaged inside a gorgeous keepsake box, or at least I'm gonna keep mine, which definitely adds to the loveliness of the gift. These cupcakes are so, so delicious. Their limited edition flavors for Valentine's Day include white chocolate cookies and cream, red velvet, dulce de leche, and chocolate caramel brownie, and more. They also have vegan and gluten-free options. My favorite one was the milk chocolate one, which is made from chocolate cake with chocolate ganache stuffing, topped with a bright pink vanilla icing and a piece of Hershey's chocolate. It was so, so good. And they're gorgeous too. Go to bakedbymelissa.com/birthful to take a look. Baked by Melissa offers 1 and 2 day shipping nationwide. Remember, the last day for standard shipping for Valentine's Day delivery is February 12 at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, but you can order now and schedule your cupcake delivery on Valentine's Day. This Valentine's Day, send your loved ones the perfect gift. Baked by Melissa. Go to bakedbymelissa.com/birthful and use the promo code birthful to get 15% off your order. Take advantage of this special offer for my listeners. That's 15% off at bakedbymelissa.com/birthful with the promo code birthful. And we are back talking with Melissa Stadler about her breastfeeding experience. So I did jump ahead, but let's go back to, you were at the hospital. They said, you know, as long as your milk comes in, it's going to, her sugar levels are going to be fine. And here are things. So that you were working with the lactation consultant to try to adjust her in a way to minimize the pain during breastfeeding. So what happened then when you got home?
So I was feeling better again, a little more confident. I had the shield and things were working pretty well with that. Still painful, but not as bad as that first latch. Then we got home and took her to her first appointment. And even then, things were still fine. She had dropped 7.5% roughly of her birth weight, or from her birth weight. And her pediatrician was like, she's dropped weight. That's totally normal. Newborns drop weight. She's like, it's a little bit high, but nothing to worry about right now. But she did want to check her again soon, just to monitor her weight a little bit. And so 2 weeks later, we brought her back, and she had gone over the 10% mark. So from what we were told, the birth weight should drop. They should lose weight for maybe around the first week or so, and then they should be starting to at least gain a little bit by the 2 week mark. Mm-hmm. But she was still dropping, and it had gone over that 10%. So at that point, she, or the pediatrician, had me start a triple feeding cycle, where I would breastfeed Claire, and then I would pump right after that. So I'd breastfeed her on both sides, and then pump, and then whatever I could express from the pump, I would feed her in a bottle. So each feeding session was that three-part process. And that the idea was that if her latch wasn't working properly, that she might not be getting as much milk as she needed because she wasn't sucking correctly. So from the bottle, she could still get my expressed milk and hopefully get her weight back up. And it was after, so backing up just a little bit, it was after the first appointment with the pediatrician that I started seeing the lactation consultant. And she had me work at, because my milk had just come in, and so I was having some engorgement. She had me work on some reverse pressure softening to help her latch. So like when the engorgement would happen, the nipple would be too shallow, I guess, for her to be able to get onto. So the reverse pressure softening was just taking two fingers on either side and kind of pressing down to soften the base of the nipple so that she could have more surface area, I guess, to latch onto.
The way I've heard it describing it, it really helps, is when your breasts are engorged, it's more like, so imagine a balloon and how you, when it's not very full or not very tight, there's still air in it, but you can like pull some and shape it right into more of an elongated stuff, yeah. Shape. But if it's really full of air, if you're trying, there's nothing that you can sort of latch onto.
Mm-hmm. And so she told me that the nipple shield could be impacting the weight loss because they can interfere with the milk intake. And she gave me the tongue exercises that first day. So then at the 2 week mark is when I went back and started doing the triple feeding, adding the triple feeding to our routine. And at first I was triple feeding every hour and a half, and I was getting about an ounce of milk at a time from pumping. So she would nurse on both sides, and then I would pump an ounce after she'd nursed and feed her that from the bottle.
So when were you sleeping in all this? Like,
that's definitely, I didn't do a lot of sleeping. During the day,
that
I was
sounds really hard.
Yeah. During the day I was pumping every hour and a half. At night I would lengthen that to every 3 to 4 hours, but it was still, it was a lot. And, I ended up sleeping with her in her nursery. We had a reclining chair, and it was like one of those things that before I had her, I was like, I will never, ever, ever, ever co-sleep. Like, I'm gonna put her on her back in the crib by herself. And like, it went out the window so fast. As soon as I started the whole breastfeeding process, she slept on my chest in the chair, and I had these pillows under my arms to kind of prop them up and make this little baby fortress, and I had my pump on a stand next to me, and we just went through the nights like that. Otherwise I wouldn't have slept at all.
And you didn't bringing her like into your bed wasn't an option?
Yeah, so she couldn't nurse, she couldn't sideline position nurse.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't figure, like, she just couldn't latch it all that way for some reason. So the only way I could get her to latch was in the cradle position, leaning forward, and she was nursing for an hour to over an hour each time she was latched. And then that mixed with the pumping was, it just, the in and out of bed and everything, it just, yeah. So we ended up just in the recliner, and I would kind of sit forward and then lean back and sit forward and lean back mm-hmm. through the night.
And you had only seen the pediatrician, or sorry, the lactation consultant that one time, right after your pediatrician, or the independent lactation consultant one time after the first meeting with your pediatrician. And then it was 2 weeks before you saw the pediatrician again. And did you see the lactation consultant any time in between, or was it just you guys figuring it out during those 2 weeks?
Yes. So after we started the triple feeding, I went back to see the lactation consultant. Her name is Kara. So I started seeing Kara again pretty regularly after that, because she could do weight checks with Claire without me having to go into the pediatrician's office every time. And so they were kind of in contact with her weight check-ins. And so I saw her pretty frequently. She, there's so many parts to this whole thing. So it was there was the triple feeding process, there was the tongue thrusting pain, and then the exercises that I was doing with her tongue to help that pain. And then I also started experiencing nipple blanching. They would turn white, and it was painful that way too, but it was a different kind of pain. And she called it Raynaud's, and it had to do with, I guess, response to cold. And so I was adding heat compresses, and she had me start spacing out the pumping. So I would, before I was feeding, pumping bottle all back to back. And she thought that might have been triggering the Raynaud's a little bit. So I would wait an hour after feeding to pump after that. And that helped a little bit. She referred me to a craniosacral therapist at one point. And I went to her, and I'm still sort of on the fence about whether or not it was effective. All I know is when I went to see her, she had some like baby whispering stuff she did. Like Claire would be laying there crying, and she would like just touch her head, and she would stop crying and just relax. And I was like, can you teach me that? But
did you guys just do the one cranial sacral therapy with?
I just went the one time. And that's why I don't know how effective it could have been. I just know that it was really painful on one side, like more so than the other. She did some work with her, and then the pain switched. So it was more painful on the other side, but the one side felt better after that session. So it was definitely an interesting sort of experience. But it was a little, we couldn't really, our insurance didn't cover it, and it was a little more than we could afford to continue doing.
I hear you completely. It's tough because you got so much going on, and there's only so many hours in the day and so many referrals and people telling you different things. And also, but the reason I'm glad you brought up the cranial sacral therapy is because of considering how her entry into the world, right, with the 2 hours of pushing, and probably got a lot of different pressures on her neck and head as they were trying to get her out with the shoulder dystocia situation.
Mm-hmm.
There might have been, I will link to that oral function episode for sure, but it's not just about the tip of the tongue, right, which is what we usually see. The tongue is so long, and how jaw movement and neck, if you have a kink in your neck or any of tensions in ligaments, tendons, muscles, all of that comes into, like, breastfeeding is so complex
mm-hmm.
in terms of function that I totally can imagine that you saw a difference in terms of what she was doing with her mouth, but with that feedback of pain going different to one breast than the other breast.
Yeah. And she did say, so she asked if there was more pain on one side, and she did work more on the side, like, where she would be, I don't know, yeah, whichever side affected the left side she was focusing on more than the other. So it kind of, it just made me wonder if it was related to that, why the pain switched to the other side. Like, mm-hmm. she
did you guys do any chiropractic adjustments on Claire?
No, I didn't. I never saw a chiropractor for her.
Sorry to like tangent you off to sacral land.
Yeah, it was definitely, I'd never heard of it. But it was definitely interesting. And the baby whispering was really cool to watch. Just like a single touch could just melt her. Like, she would just totally relax. It was pretty wild.
And that's the magic of cranial sacral, that it works on nervous system and fascia, which is it's like a sheath that covers all our organs and body, all parts of us. It surrounds the tongue. And it's, you know how, do you eat chicken?
Yes.
I don't eat chicken, but I used to at some point. And you know that when you get like a chicken breast, that little filmy thing that's on top, on top of the muscle? That's the fascia. It's this like sheath that we have between the skin and the muscle. Okay. And so cranial sacral works on that level. That's why it's like she's just touching her, but it's this exquisite sort of very light touch, because if you go too deep, you're touching muscle. They just want to get the kinks out of that little sheath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like baby whispering for sure. So yeah. Don't you think you're not doing anything?
Yeah. So I guess going back to her, so the triple pumping actually ended up working pretty well. She, over the weekend that I started it, she gained 2 ounces in 3 days. So it was her mm-hmm. first gain in weight that we'd had since birth. So that was after the weekend of triple pumping and being completely exhausted. It was good to know that something was happening. And it gave me some more confidence again that, like, okay, like, it's a little extra work, but I am still feeding my baby and I'm doing my job and we're getting somewhere. And let's see, it was around 1 month old that she finally got back to her birth weight. So I was, over the course of time, I was pumping larger and larger volumes, still continuing the triple pumping or the triple feeding with the pumping. And a few days before she turned 1 month old, she was only 2.8% under her birth weight. So she was almost there. And then around a month, she got back up to it. And then by 4 months, she had doubled. By 4 months is when she had doubled her weight. And I had stopped the triple feeding somewhere around that 1 month mark. Yeah, so she started gaining pretty steadily from there on. And the latch, I think that the tongue exercises were helping her latch. But then after the triple feeding stopped, was still working with Kara, my lactation consultant, our next goal was to try and figure out how to get the shield off. Because I would try to take it off even a month later, and it was still just so painful, and I couldn't do it. So we continued doing the tongue exercises and starting to wean off the shield. So I would do like one feeding per day without it, and it would be painful, but it would help her, I guess, feel what her actual latch should feel like without that barrier. And so she started getting that practice, I guess.
So that's another learning curve for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, let's go back just a second to you'd been, when she was a month old and she got back to birth weight, which, my goodness, what a milestone.
Yeah.
But during that's a whole month that you were triple feeding, pumping at all hours, not getting sleep. Like, towards the end of that month, where was your mental state and how are you feeling about it? Were you even thinking like how much longer you were going to do this?
Well, so I, more than anything, I hated my breast pump. I was so over that thing after all of it. But I think more than anything, it made me want to continue breastfeeding as long as I possibly could, because I, like, it felt like so much groundwork that had been laid. Like, I'd been doing all of this work and And so I felt like to stop breastfeeding, like if I would have stopped at 6 months, it felt like a disservice to everything I had done before. I guess I'd worked so hard to get there. So we're still breastfeeding at 10 months. My goal is to go as long as she wants to, as long as we can, just because I think it gave me that extra perspective on it, that it's not something that you should always just take for granted. It's not that easy, just like latch and go, that I pictured in my head before I had her. And I mean, now it is. It's now it's very simple. I mean, she latches and she nurses and then she's done and goes on.
Doesn't
and
hurt.
No pain at all anymore. And the pain probably went away around 2 months. I had my sister-in-law take some breastfeeding photos of us at 2 months, and it was kind of like this internal celebration of like, I am doing this without a nipple shield and it doesn't hurt, and we figured it out. And I was talking to Kara yesterday actually about this episode, and we both felt like it was important to mention that, because I don't want to frame this in a way that puts new moms off of breastfeeding, I guess, because it can sound kind of scary, I think, when you just like go through all of these terrible, difficult things that we had to go through. But I feel like it was more than worth it. Now looking back on it, it's all so foggy. Like I literally have to have notes here to read to even remember all of the details, because it feels like so long ago that we even did it, and now it's so good that it's definitely worth going through. And it's not that common either. It's not everybody is going to have all of those issues, but I do feel like it's still important to share, because I feel like it's good to know that that can happen, and to not go in, I guess, like I did, so cocky, like that nothing bad could ever happen. But just to know that there is a whole host of a whole variety of things that can happen during a breastfeeding journey, and that there are ways to work through it, and that there are resources, and to kind of know what those resources are ahead of time.
Well, and that's key, right? Of lining up those resources ahead of time, so that you have your lactation consultant kind of on speed dial even before the baby is born. And even if you can, I encourage people to connect and meet with the lactation consultant even before they have their babies. And like that sounds weird, but it's not. It gives you start a relationship, it lays some groundwork, they can take a look at your nipples, and you know, if by any chance there's some physical situation that might come up, they can have, you guys can be on top of it and know like, this might be a challenge. So, you know, let's keep this in mind. Do that, and or go to a breastfeeding moms group in your area, like La Leche League, a breastfeeding cafe, whatever it is. If you're pregnant, go. It's not going to be weird. They will gladly open arms welcome you to, so you can see breastfeeding, because I think that's one of the biggest problems. We don't see it happening, and then hearing also their stories, like you're the story that you've shared about how everybody has some sort of obstacles and to a more lesser degree of having to, you know, sometimes then everything was perfect, everything was great, everything was smooth, flowing from the beginning, and then baby went on a nursing strike and didn't want to eat for 3 days. Yep. And what do you do with that? Like, there's so many weird things, not weird, but so unexpected things that can happen. For sure.
I thought Kara yesterday mentioned something that was important too, that it's easy to feel like there's all these different obstacles, like, so she has her tongue thrusting problem and she's not gaining weight and I'm having this Raynaud's pain, and it's like feels like all of these different issues, but she mentioned how they don't really happen in isolation, that it's this network of your body and the baby and this communication that's happening, and it's not just all of these individual problems, but it's this whole collective sort of process, and trying to see how all of those pieces connect and how one solution can also solve other obstacles as well, and trying to get the whole process to work together, which I feel
absolutely
like is an important perspective.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that I wanted to talk about is, how did you get rid of that nipple shield? Because I find that is a big obstacle for a lot of people, and it can be really difficult to remove it. And it seems like it was around month two that you'd worked on it for about a month.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
So I think initially it's important, because this is something I had no clue about, but it's important to think about the size of the nipple shield, because at first I had the wrong size, and it was one, causing more pain, and it was also making it harder to stay on. I think it was affecting her latch. So having the right fit of nipple shield is important, because then you're not starting from 10 steps back. You're like in the right spot with the actual device itself, to move forward.
So that tells me that you started out with the wrong size. How did you get to the right size one, so that people say that are, because you were given this nipple shield in the hospital.
Yes.
And in the hospital, how can you know that you've got the wrong size if the lactation, you're like, the lactation consultant handed me this, I'll use this. If they didn't take the time to fit you, like, how can you identify if it's not the right size?
So I think on one hand, I think choosing your lactation consultant is almost as important as choosing your provider for your birth and your pregnancy, because I feel like it can be a completely different experience. I've talked with several lactation consultants at this point, and by far Kara was the most knowledgeable, the most helpful, the most willing to work through that whole process with me. And it was so important to have somebody who could take the time to do that. Because at the hospital, they didn't measure my nipple size. They didn't think about they just kind of eyeballed it and gave me the shield and moved on. And then it was actually a video chat lactation consultant that told me about the different sizes. This is a little bit of a tangent, but I got my breast pump through insurance, which I want to talk about before we're done here. And then through my breast pump, there was a 30-day trial of the Medela lactation consultant online service. So it's 24-hour access to video chat with IBCLCs that you can just kind of hash things out with. And so it was the middle of the night. I had just gotten home. It was our first night at home. And I was just having all this pain. I was feeling just hopeless. Like, I was like, this is never going to stop hurting. And granted, it was day one, and everything was new. But I pulled up this video chat, and she was able to just kind of talk through things with me. And she was like, I can't measure you, so I don't know what size you are, but find somebody who can, and my guess is that it's the size of your nipple shield. And so then later on, when I eventually talked to Kara, she was able to actually measure, and we were able to find a better size for that. And on top of that, the pump flanges, I was able to resize my pump flanges to help with the pain of pumping as well.
And that was all through the video IBCLC that helped you to do that?
Yes. Yep. And then so
that's
later
amazing.
On, Kara was the one that measured me. But yeah, she just the video chat, she was the first one who even brought up that maybe it was the wrong size.
Right. And I would encourage people also, like, that I'm going to put that resource on the show notes as well. And I would encourage people to also follow, like, I did a Facebook Live recently on our fifth year celebration with Abby Thuring, who's the badass breastfeeder. And on her Instagram feed, she does tips from time to time. And she just had like a 15-minute mini video tip about flange sizes. And right? Like, it doesn't take much to figure it out. Once you think about it, it's like, duh, of course, not everybody has the same size nipple.
Yeah, it's just something, it seems super obvious once you start looking at it, and it's very easy to resize. But yeah, just like when you're brand new to it and you're just like, you don't even think about that. But it was a huge thing. And then in the weaning process, weaning off the nipple shield, I think it made that process easier. And then from there, it was just, like I said, kind of that trial and error, like, can I take it off now? Okay, this is tolerable. I can deal with it for this one nursing session. And then I would put it back on for the rest of the day. And then I'd be like, okay, this one is okay. And then the next nursing session, try it again. And then, okay, this feels okay. And just kind of working through that gradually, because I think if you just try to take it off and get rid of it, you're back where you started. Your nipples are cracked or even, you know, blistering, or you're in a lot of pain, and then you put it back on and it's that never-ending process. But I think it's really important to just kind of take those baby steps off of it. So you're not damaging your nipples, because then you're back at square one.
Oh, yeah. No, you don't want to backtrack, but you just are giving the opportunity for that tongue to function differently, to get like you said, to get the gist of what it feels like and what adjustments need to be made now that there's not that barrier in between.
Mm-hmm.
So around 2 months, you had your sister or your sister-in-law take pictures of you breastfeeding without a nipple shield. Was it at that point that you felt like, oh, we finally have this? Or when did you feel like we're over this crazy hump and now breastfeeding is wonderful?
So that's kind of it's a mixed question, because I hit that point around when she was 2 months where the shield was gone. Every single feeding was pain-free. I felt so good. This giant wave of relief and excitement, because I was like, I finally, like, we're here where I wanted to be, like, just peaceful breastfeeding and that bonding, the skin to skin contact with her mouth. There was no silicone there anymore. And it felt so good. And then like 2 days later, I got thrush. So I just remember waking up in the middle of the night and my nipples were just burning. They were burning so bad. And I was like, what is happening? Like, everything was good. I just started crying. I was like, we were on the home stretch. Like, things were great. Why is this pain here? And I went back to Kara again and she told me it was probably thrush. And I ended up using the Gentian Violet. So you like paint it on, mm-hmm. and then the baby latches, and so then my nipples are purple and her mouth was purple, and it was this whole thing. But I mean, we made it past that too. But after the thrush, then shortly after 2 months it was pain free from there.
And now you're at 10 months. Yay.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. What a mountain of work and such an obstacle to conquer, for sure. Yeah, I think it's so hard because during those times when it's dire in the middle of the night and your nipples hurt, I know I felt in situations I was like, I can't anymore. I can't do this anymore. And you're sleep deprived and I can't. And then you go like, okay, let's try it one more time. So what kept you going? What kept you going when it was so dire?
I think the biggest contributing factor was my support system. I think having Kara there to ask questions and just troubleshoot with whenever I needed to go see her, I could go work things out. And then my husband was amazing. He went back to work pretty quickly after she was born, but he was still doing all the cleaning and the dishes. He was bringing me smoothies every morning and making me oatmeal, and he would bring me water, and just like all those little things that keep you kind of propped up when you're when you're barely holding it together. It was essential. And then just knowing when you've reached your limit and knowing that it's okay to take a break. Sometimes I would just set her down in her pack and play, and I would go sit in the laundry room, which is the farthest room away from where she was. And I would just sit on the floor and like sit and find a quiet moment and just know that I had to walk away and be done for a minute, and then I could kind of take some breaths and come back to it. But yeah, it can be really overwhelming. And I feel like it's important to know that, because when you're feeling that, you're like, what's wrong with me? Why am I so angry? Why am I so like emotional right now? Why am I like, why do I hate my baby? But you don't hate your baby. You're just tired and feeling run down. And it's okay to take a minute to recollect yourself.
Absolutely. And you don't have to, you'll always love your baby, but you don't have to only love your baby all the time, right? You can love and hate your baby for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I want to have, you know, understanding and grace for those people out there who are in a situation that might have all these things going on, and say they have to go back to work at 2 weeks, or you know that they don't have the time to just focus on this, and understanding that those are extra circumstances that are going to up the game so much more, that you know I want to lessen the guilt, of saying, you know what, this is just too much. I've found my limit. And then we're going to find a different way to connect and bond. Because I have heard that from other stories and other parents of, it was just so overwhelming. One, I wasn't bonding or connecting with my child. It was just about the pump. And then once we stopped, it was an amazing relief. So I think I want to stress that that's a choice that only you can make of what's right for you. But I would so appreciate the different perspectives on it, and hearing stories like yours of, we went through all this, but hey, we got it. Like, this wasn't the way it was going to be forever. We did get to a place, there was changes, improvement. We got to a place where now things are lovely breastfeeding wise.
Yeah. And like you said, I think it's important to, I think more than anything, it's a testament to what all mothers do for their babies, because like you said, not everybody goes through the breastfeeding process, and it's just too much. And I think at some point, like I said, you need to take your own mental state into account and know what your limits are. And when you've reached that, you've reached that. But every mom goes through those sacrifices. If it's not with breastfeeding, it's something else. I like to kind of explain that to people, because just because I went through all of these struggles with breastfeeding and you didn't, that, I mean, you make other sacrifices for your baby that I have never made. So, I mean, it's all so unique, every story and every relationship. And I think it gets so caught up, especially when you're looking through like Instagram and Facebook, things get so caught up on that feeding journey, like how you're feeding your baby, and I think a lot of guilt comes from that, but it gets distracted from the fact that no matter what how you're feeding your baby, we're all making sacrifices and going through struggles and working through difficult moments and moments of overwhelming frustration, and and it all matters. It's all important.
Absolutely. And you've got to find the balance that's right for you. I so appreciate you coming on the show today to share this story, your story of breastfeeding. I think we definitely need to hear more of those. And as you were talking, I'm going like, oh, there's this episode. Like, there's like 10 more episodes that I want everybody to listen to. So that resource list on the show notes might be
definitely,
a little.
I heard some new ones that I haven't heard yet, so I'll have to go in and check those out too.
Yeah, and I was thinking of Jack Newman, and there's a couple with him, and he despises nipple shields, so it's a really great, like, the way he talks about it, it's hilarious. he's a lactation consultant, pediatrician.
Very cool.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else you wanted to tell the listeners about breastfeeding?
Yeah, so I did want to mention the breast pump through insurance thing that I know you've mentioned on the show before, and I'm sure people, when you're pregnant, you see the ads pop up all over the place for like Aeroflow and where you can get your breast pump through insurance. But something that I didn't know about that I only kind of realized working in the billing department at the hospital was that if you call your insurance company directly, sometimes you can be covered for more than you can through the third party company. So I, through Aeroflow and a couple other companies that I got like looked at for a breast pump, I was only able to get a certain amount covered. And then when I called my insurance directly, they do a full reimbursement of any breast pump of my choice. So I was able to buy it up front, send them the receipt, and then they reimbursed me in full. So I was able to choose exactly what breast pump I wanted. And I don't, not every insurance is like that, but I think it's important to call your specific insurance company and see what your coverage is, because there might be more options than you realize.
That is a great point. Fantastic. Thank you again so very much for sharing your story and being here on the show today. This was lovely.
Yes, thank you. It was awesome to be a part of it. Like I said, I listened to it my whole third trimester, and it's really cool to be on here.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And if you want to learn specific ways in which you can support your physiology during pregnancy and labor so you can own your birth and have a flowing and connected experience with less interventions, then go sign up for my Birth Prep online series. Classes start next Thursday, February 6th, and will take place through live webinars. So go to birthfulcourses.com to learn more. Don't delay. Go sign up. And also, please join me and the inspiring Dr. Neil Shaw this Thursday, January 30th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time at facebook.com/birthful for a live event with giveaways to celebrate Birthful's 5 years. This is the last week, so make sure you join us. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the amazing Birthful patrons, and the wonderful people at Family Album and Baked by Melissa. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web, and go to bakedbymelissa.com/birthful and use the code BIRTHFUL for 15% off your order. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Oh, and here's what Melissa said was happening with her breakfast.
I actually have not eaten breakfast yet. I am drinking some coffee.
I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Losada.